This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Monday, May 6th, 2019. I'm Caleb Brown. The Chinese trade delegation is still coming for talks after the president threatened higher tariffs on billions of dollars of imports into the U.S. Dan Eikenson directs the Stiefel Center for Trade Policy Studies at the Cato Institute. He discusses the importance of trade to American producers, farmers, and everyday Americans. We spoke this morning.
You've just returned from China. What was the mood there with respect to trade with the United States?
Well, I think people are concerned about whether or not there's going to be an agreement to end the trade war. There is, I wouldn't say hostility, but the Chinese scholars with whom I met were much more assertive than they had been in the past about the about how certain they are that their government is right in their positions and that President Trump is acting a bit too aggressively. But certainly there is interest in coming up with some solutions that are going to work. You know, this trade war has been going on for about a year. Negotiations have been going on for about that long to try to overcome some of the problems that the United States has identified in China. And we're very close, reportedly, to a resolution. And just yesterday, President Trump announced that he is going to increase the tariffs on Chinese goods from 10% to 25% on $200 billion worth of goods that have been subject to the lower rate for the past 8 or 9 months. And he's also said that he's going to subject the rest of Chinese goods that we import to 25% tariffs. So that's kind of created a bit of a frenzy in markets, certainly in inboxes on social media, and it's unclear what this means. On Wednesday, the United States is expecting the arrival of a Chinese delegation to sort of conclude these negotiations, and now there's a question as to whether or not they're even going to come. But we'll see. President Trump has a tendency to behave sort of impulsively, and even though he's moving markets, it doesn't seem to dissuade him from this behavior. But we'll see how it plays out.
Your idea of raising tariffs just before a trade delegation is supposed to arrive would seem to be counterproductive to getting a deal. Is there a desire by this administration to have positive trading relations with China?
Yes, I think there is. I think there's a lot of optics that the president is concerned about. You know, he champions himself as the world's greatest negotiator. He says he's going to hold China to account, the first president to ever do that. So that means that he needs to make good on his promises to compel the Chinese to engage in structural reforms with respect to, you know, forced technology transfer and do a better job of intellectual property enforcement and to reduce the role of state-owned enterprises in the economy in China. And if a deal emerges that doesn't address those issues sufficiently, I think the president is going to come under some scrutiny and an attack from, you know, the 21 Democratic presidential aspirants who want to outflank him on this issue. I mean, I think politically, there the Rust Belt workers who supported Trump, who had for several elections been in the Democratic camp, are contestable, and I think the Democrats would like to win them back. And so, Trump needs to get some of the things that he's promised that he's going to get. Reports of, in recent weeks suggest that maybe it's not going to be as comprehensive a deal as it as the president had promised. So, that could be something that's motivating him. I don't subscribe to his tactics. The assumption that we have leverage by threatening to raise tariffs, which are just taxes on American consumers, households, and businesses, doesn't strike me as the best way to move forward. And you know, the Chinese have a deep well of patriotism, which can easily be morphed into nationalism. And I suspect that if this trade war is to go on for a long time, the Chinese would be able to endure it pretty well.
All right. So you mentioned voters who supported the president. These are voters who are involved in the agricultural sector, some in the manufacturing sector, who would like to continue exporting a great deal of their goods to China. What's the likely result of not getting a deal?
Yeah, I think they'll have a hard time. So first of all, there are U.S. manufacturers who are hurt by our own tariffs because the cost of the intermediate inputs that they require to build their products is more expensive. And then there are the farmers and manufacturers who are facing retaliation from China who will see no respite if there's not an end to this deal. You know, one of the problems, those of us who have studied trade history and know what happened in the 1930s, were somewhat aghast at the fact that the president would even spark a trade war, you know, recognizing what the potential hazards are. But it turns out that so far, you know, the U.S. economy, as juiced as it is on fiscal stimulus and monetary stimulus, and it is also at sort of the peak of the business cycle, hasn't really felt the pain as acutely as we would expect. There are concentrated pockets in the U.S. economy, concentrated industries, and certainly a lot of agricultural exporters who are hurting as a result of this. But it has not been as broadly felt as one might otherwise expect. It's also the case that many of these farmers and manufacturers seem to have this view that, you know, that President Trump addressing these Chinese issues, they support it and they think it's something that needs to be done. And so they seem to be willing to take it on the chin. I mean, I don't know for how long, but there has certainly been much less vocal opposition and from this segment than one would expect. So it's just a matter of time. I think this could create real huge financial hardships going forward if we don't end the trade war very soon.
Now, again, voters, there is a newfound free trade enthusiasm among Democrats in the U.S. Is that going to be deeply held over the long term, or is it just opposition to Donald Trump that maybe reflexively makes these large groups of people suddenly be for things that he's against?
I think that is what you just described is a phenomenon we see a lot. So opposition to the president from the party that's out of the executive power is motivating a lot of this pro-trade sentiment, I think. But also, you know, people who associate as Democrats, who register as Democratic voters, tend to be more in favor of trade and globalization and openness. They tend to be more cosmopolitan, I suppose. And there has been this bit of a flip in the among Republican supporters and Democratic supporters. The Democrats tend to be more in favor of trade now. It's the Democratic leadership in Congress that has not really heard the signal and changed its tune. They're still sort of beholden to labor and some of the anti-trade forces. We saw after the midterm election some districts in Republican strongholds in the agricultural sectors and in the Midwest become more Democratic, either flip or become much less Republican. And that could be because of the tariffs that have been imposed. But some of it also may be just because of opposition to Trump's tenor and to his perspectives. So, you know, whether it endures, I think that the 2020 election will help us sort through that. But certainly, if we go into a prolonged period where trade is contracting and the economy is contracting, I think most Americans will come to realize once again the importance of open trade.
And in terms of the scale of the trade that the United States engages in with China, what does it represent in terms of the U.S. economy?
The U.S. economy is about a $20 trillion economy, and U.S. trade with China is about $800 billion when you took it goods and services. So, you know, less than 5%, but it has major trickle effects. When you start imposing duties on intermediate goods It drives up the cost of production and it magnifies through the supply chain. And you know, it sounds like a small number, but it's our largest trading relationship. And lots of companies are heavily invested in the architecture of these supply chains, and it would be very disruptive and very costly to change those supply chains.
Dan Eikenson directs the Herbert A. Stiefel Center for Trade Policy Studies at the Cato Institute. Subscribe to the Cato Daily Podcast wherever you get your podcasts, and follow us on Twitter @CatoPodcast.